Vampires are a pillar of modern pop culture. From Edward Cullen to Dracula, they're depicted as bloodthirsty, nocturnal immortals, sometimes with the power of transfiguration, an allergy to garlic, and in desperate need of sunblock.
But you don't hear a lot of real-life claims of folks actually encountering them anywhere but on screen or in the pages of a book. That's because they're entirely mythical. Or so we thought.
Are the lights on? Good. Welcome to Listen with the Lights On. I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
And I'm Patrick Garrett.
I am Dracula.
So what's your experience with vampires?
To me, vampires were always just that hokey, mythical creature that lurked, you know, in a big mansion on a hilltop and Van Helsing coming up the hill to try and murder him.
I will find your earth box and drive that stake through your heart.
Yeah, they were very, like, lived forever. They sucked your blood. They hated garlic. And if you held up a cross or crucifix, they would be afraid. And then they would turn to ash in the sunlight, right?
I'm flesh and blood, but not human. I haven't been human for 200 years.
We talked to folklorist and author Michael Bell. He told us that vampires are real. Bell's the author of Food for the Dead, a look at the New England vampire panic. He looks at cases of suspected vampirism in 19th century Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, New York, and beyond. And he's still on the hunt for more vampires, but not the type of fanged menaces of Transylvania that we thought. So you are heading up to West Glens Falls to investigate a case there. Can you tell me a little bit about what you know of that one so far?
This one happened in 1858, and it appeared in a lot of newspapers. I think it first appeared probably in the West Glens Falls Republican. I'm guessing in late March of 1858, and most of them published it under the headline, Barbarous Superstition. And I'll read to the little...
That's a hook. I would read an article about that.
A dead body disinterred and the heart taken out to cure a man of consumption. 2 exclamation points.
Really hits home there.
A libel and a disgrace upon the intelligence of this community was perpetrated last week at the small settlement of Goodspeedsville. Some mile or two from this village, it appears that a man by the name of Adams, living in Goodspeedsville, died about 17 months ago, leaving a wife to mourn his loss. The widow removed to the west and remained there a short time since when she returned to this town. Upon her return, she found her deceased husband's brother dying with consumption and declared he could be cured only in the following manner, which she said the practice where she was living had came from. The body of her husband should be taken up, the heart dissected, and if any blood was found in the heart, it should be burned and the sick man would recover. This monstrous proposition was immediately acted upon, the dead body disinterred, and a physician called, who took out the heart and lungs, but not enough blood was found to answer the purpose, the body having been lain too long. The further prosecution of this infamous project was abandoned.
How did you start studying vampires?
When I first went to Rhode Island, I started doing a project that was funded by the National Endowment for the Humanities, looking at the southern county, Washington County, called South County. And one of my interns said, you've got to talk to this guy. It was at the end of Sodom Trail down in Exeter. And I said, okay. And she said, be sure to ask him about his family's vampire. And I'm like, okay.
That's not good.
Well, I'd been a folklorist for quite a while by that time. And I'd never heard any authentic vampire stories or, you know, encountered any vampires. So it really did get my attention, and he told me the story of Mercy Brown, who it turns out was the last person exhumed as a vampire, you know, in New England, which was 1892.
Now, what does it mean to be exhumed as a vampire? What exactly does that entail?
Pretty graphically, it's when people in a family are dying of consumption. That's what they called pulmonary tuberculosis. Sometimes when the doctors would say, hey, it's in the hands of God, there's nothing more we can do, they didn't understand it was caused by a germ. They just knew that one person after another was getting sick and dying and wasting away. So the folk remedy that had been passed around for a long time was you go out to the cemetery, exhume the bodies of your dead relatives who had died from this disease, check their hearts or other vital organs to see which ones had fresh blood in them, liquid. They were looking for liquid blood, which they interpreted as fresh. And you would cut the heart out, burn it to ashes. And sometimes, as in the case of Mercy Brown, in 1892, you might feed the ashes to someone in the family who was sick. And that was supposed to take care of the problem.
Where did this come from?
Probably Eastern Europe. As you know, most people who settled in New England were from Britain, especially from the southeastern part or southwestern part of England. Mm-hmm. And if you go and look for the vampire practice there, you're going to be disappointed because it wasn't part of their folklore. How would this come to New England from Eastern Europe? What really got me started understanding how it came here was the very first case that I found, the earliest, which is from 1784 in Willington, Connecticut, where a man who was a town official in Willington wrote a letter to the newspaper complaining about a foreign quack doctor in town who was claiming that he could cure everything, including consumption. And he had actually talked a man in town, another town official, into exhuming the bodies of some dead children, looking for a vine that was supposed to be growing from the corpse. If the vine was found growing and thriving, then they were supposed to cut the vine and cut out the vital organs and burn it all to ashes, which would take care of the problem.
Now, how does this tie together with what we... And maybe it doesn't, but we view as a vampire today. I mean, what I'm taught, I'm thinking is like, oh, the Hollywood vampire, mm-hmm. they suck your blood, live forever, they're afraid of garlic.
Turn into bats.
You know, directly or indirectly, almost every modern vampire of literature and popular culture and mass media owes its identity to Count Dracula, which was a novel published by Bram Stoker in 1897. And his novel was based loosely on vampire folklore. And it's interesting that he got his information mainly from a book that was written by the wife of a British cavalry officer who was stationed in Transylvania in the mid-1800s. So what we have is a real redaction, you know, a watering down of an authentic tradition. It's like he put his dipper into a flowing stream of water and came out with this little group of stuff he called vampires, and then he put it in his book.
And so, now we have all of
them. Now we have, clones of Dracula. But, you know, folk tradition is very fluid, and it's always changing because it travels around by word of mouth or by imitation, you know, and different communities have different variants of the same sort of folklore, mm-hmm. whether it's vampires or, you know, how to make bread.
I hope you don't have to dig up any dead bodies to make bread.
Yeah, only if you're making a certain kind.
You said that you're tracing over 60 cases of vampirism or vampires in New England, and they're all tied to the exhumation of bodies over the tuberculosis.
Yes.
Okay.
Usually the exhumation. Now, there are some cases that are very interesting where someone who's sick and dying will plead. I found at least two of these, plead with their parents, please, when I die, cut my heart out and burn it